Hey everyone, it's Kate. I am here to ask for a little help before the show today. We have a Google form right down there in our show notes that you can click to give us your feedback. We want to know about your favorite hosts, your favorite topics, what you like, what you don't, and we want to use it all to make the show better. So make sure you go to the show notes, click that link or paste it into your browser, and let us know what you think when this episode is done. Here's the show.
Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about pop culture with guests from around the But Why Though writing community. I'm your host, Alex, joined this week by Catherine.
Hi, everyone.
And Matt.
Hello.
This week, we are talking about game prices, specifically that $70 creep. But before we dive into that, there is some big news as of today that we wanted to go over, which is specifically HBO Max and Discovery Plus under the Warner Brothers brand merging into Max. A lot of big corporations at play here, and for literally for it to just boil down to, hey, there's a new streaming service that's actually old streaming services, and also we're gonna mess up the price tiers and do stuff. Matt, you want to explain a little bit about what happened?
So one, obviously they took HBO Max and made Max, which also is hilarious because mm-hmm. And they made it blue. It's very bright blue.
Is it blue now?
It looks like the Facebook logo, except instead of Facebook it says Max.
I don't care for that. No, I liked the purple, honestly.
I didn't like the purple. But I guess for the biggest thing for like this whole stuff outside the tiers, which I guess we can talk about in a second, of like confusion of what they are, because now that's the blue tier, ultimate tier, new stuff. Of we've seen this with other stuff, like Paramount and Showtime. They have add-on, but they kind of mix together. They've merged, but not merged. But I think about it, and I'm like, they kind of have overlapping audiences, you know, like Paramount. You know, you can watch Star Trek, but it's a drama. Showtime, they got dramas or whatever. You know, you have an overlapping possible. HBO Max and Discovery Plus have, like, no overlap whatsoever.
They don't. Well, and I was reading, apparently part of why they're merging and doing away with the HBO part of it is because they think they'll reach a wider audience by dropping the HBO because it's known for highbrow television and they want people to know that there's more than just that.
How dare you call Discovery Plus lowbrow television, first of all. As the Discovery Plus person, I guess, on this podcast, yes. I'm assuming, because I don't believe it. I guess, Catherine, do you watch HBO? I don't.
I do sometimes when I have access to it by way of friends.
You know, fair enough.
Yeah, but Discovery Plus, I'm sorry, Matt. I don't even know, like, that even existed.
Matt is the ambassador for Discovery
what's
Plus.
What's even on Discovery Plus?
So like, why would they even that is a fantastic thing to ask.
Oh my God.
So what is on Discovery Plus? One, you have the best cinematic universe in existence of 90 Day Fiancé and their 25 shows.
Is it really 25?
I think it's 11. And they all have about 8 seasons at this point.
My God.
That's still too much.
It's great. It's fantastic. It's the ultimate crossovers. It's what people wanted in Marvel, but done better. It's crazy. But no, the funny, as far as Discovery Plus, why we say no overlap, I think it's everything from HGTV, the Food Network, the cult station, which is Magnolia Network, all the Waco people. Mm-hmm. Then you obviously have Lifetime, TLC, the History Channel, Animal Planet, the Science Channel. Obviously, regular Discovery Originals, which is apparently like another channel of a channel. That's like the CBS All Access type channel of CBS. And then I'm sure there's like 3 or 4, but yeah, it's like actually like 12 to 15 different networks worth of content. It's huge.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I have a hard time being mad about getting access to more content because I already have HBO Max. I don't know how much of it I'll actually go through. I don't know how navigable all of this is going to be. I mean, I feel like a lot of a streaming service kind of lives and dies by how good its app is or how, you know, how good its interface is. And
which
so
we know
if
HBO's
you're going to be
terrible.
Yeah. And so merging a pretty massive company into that is like, is it just going to get more like obtuse and ridiculous? And maybe it will. Maybe they'll take some cues from Discovery Plus. Maybe they'll just redesign something entirely new. But yeah, that is something that I'm kind of not as excited about. But again, it's the same for me because anyone who already has HBO Max is just going to get rolled over to Max with no price change, I believe. Although that might have been a no price change asterisk for now.
I'm worried about, because I think right now Discovery Plus, if you have that alone, you get to keep that alone. But I'm worried because I will be worried that we might get moved into HBO Max. Because Discovery
Plus is Discovery.
I think it was like, I think it's like $5 or $6. I think it's like okay, one is like, I think ad is $4 and then like non-ad is like $7.
Yeah,
so and HBO we're really good like, still at $7. We're fine. I don't need to pay $20 for Titans.
Well, and so that's the thing. The so there's now there's an ad free there. There's an ad tier, which I think is worrisome because that just tells me that everyone's going to start moving to having an ad tier the way that
Disney.
Hulu's been doing it. Yep. And then there's the middle tier, which is basically roughly the same price point as HBO Max, and you get everything. And then there's the ultimate tier, which is $20 a month, and it gets you the exact same content, but in 4K. And it gets you up to 100 offline downloads at a time. And I think that's it.
Yes.
Which, for me, it's the paywalling 4K is the
I thought we got rid of
that.
I thought we dumped that already. Why are we going back to that?
I mean, Netflix, I think, was the only person paywalling 4K, and it's always been the most out, not the most, but it's been one of the more outdated parts of their model is to you know, hide it behind that. But
I know CuriosityStream did it for a while, but nobody cared because it was like either $1 or $2 in a month. And so it was like, that's fine.
Well, and I think that what they're not realizing is that a lot of TVs at this point, I think they upscale 1080p enough that the average person will not notice that it's not 4K.
No, that's why I don't pay like, for it. Can you tell, Catherine, sure can you tell the difference? Because I can't. I know obviously Alex.
No. Plus, also, like, I think the whole, like, as someone who doesn't, like, actively have HBO Max and then Discovery Plus, what have you.
Fair.
Like, if I'm getting an app for streaming service, I at least have an idea of what that streaming service has in terms of its content. Usually it's a cohesive, like, thought, idea, or theme. And the pairing of the two just seems really, like, too much. It's almost, like, bordering on the gamer side of, like, wanting more content. And I don't want more content. If I want to watch HBO stuff, I'm going to watch HBO stuff. I don't need to watch Disney Plus Max stuff. It's good to have that in my, I guess, arsenal. Yeah. But I'm just paying more for things that I didn't even want in the first place. Yeah. Right? Like Apple TV like has their specific curated things, and all their shows kind of a theme with it as well. So the mesh
kind of dilutes the brand.
Yeah.
What's the funny thing? Because we're backflipping back into cable, because now we're having to pay a lot more for a bunch of crap we didn't want in the first place, which is why we got rid of cable in the first place.
Yeah, it just seems like emulating cable TV at this point.
The funny part about all this as well is the only good thing for HBO Max is not even actual HBO Max. It's HBO proper, which is, to be fair, highbrow television. But that is the only good content. Like, I don't know if you've all even watched any of the actual HBO originals. They're actually HBO Max originals. Most of them are terrible.
I don't know what constant. I know that there's a difference, but I don't know which shows are Max originals and which shows are HBO originals.
I mean, basically any of the ones that are good, like Game of Thrones or like the House of the Dragon stuff, Succession, The Last of Us, those are HBO proper.
Okay, here. DMZ. Got the Wikipedia. Raised by Wolves, Gossip Girl, Station 11, DMZ, Julia, Tokyo Vice, The Staircase, Pretty Little Liars, Original Sins. And that's just the drama category. And then there's, Love Life, Flight Attendant, Generation, Made to Love. This is like, there's a couple shows on here that I think are considered like pretty good, but maybe not as many as you would want for your original streaming service.
Not for a Netflix type tier prices without Netflix tier content. And you can even argue Netflix tier content's gone down, but it's still not that.
Oh, it's for sure dropped.
Yeah, but it's not that
been,
still.
I miss the days, and not to like overly praise Apple, but I miss the days when every streaming service was as curated as Apple.
Yeah.
And they weren't just taking like random shots at things that they think might work or might stick. But it was like, you know, I mean, the thing I always point to is like very early Netflix when it was really picking up steam was Stranger Things, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black. And it was like, oh, you're like going after very intentional quality shows. And now Netflix is just like throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, and I think they're also like picking up like shows that were on like cable TV, then they moved it to that too, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they buy the rights to it, and then they label it a Netflix original, and I'm like, that's not a Netflix original. That show the hard part, had seven seasons somewhere else.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, because the problem, I think in the U.S. it was easy to tell that, but like anything that outside the U.S. that was a Netflix original, you're like, what?
Yeah.
But that was the only good thing for me, because I watched a lot of those, and Netflix actually wasn't in control of whether that got canceled, so I didn't have to worry about it getting canceled, because I was like, oh, Australia loves this, so I'm going to get 10 seasons. It doesn't matter what Netflix says. Now they kind of don't do that much, and now we don't know what we're getting.
Exactly. Well, and the other thing I'm seeing is there are some there, and this is, I think, increasingly a problem, where somehow a network or a streaming service only has rights to some episodes, where it's like, we have seasons 1 through 3 and season 5. And I'm like, okay, but what happened to season 4? Like, why don't you have that one?
On Amazon at this point. Like, Amazon is so weird.
It's super frustrating.
You know what the most frustrating thing is? You can watch all of the Mission Impossibles for free, except the third one.
Yeah, that's nonsense. Like, what is that? Where is it streaming on HBO?
Well, I have no idea where it's at, to be honest. I think part of them might be on Netflix. I think, like, two of them or something, or maybe HBO. I don't remember where they are. I think two of them somewhere, but, like, Amazon, the Prime Video has all of them except the third one, which you have to actually rent.
That's really frustrating. Yeah, I just, I don't know what the long game is for streaming services at this point, because shenanigans like this and then mergers that dilute brands and all that stuff are just very confusing as a consumer, and it makes me not want to have as many streaming services and just like really hunker down in two of them. And then when friends say, have you watched this, I can be like, no, I don't pay for that. I do watch these shows.
Yeah, either giving me your login, which now is apparently a crime.
Oh, God. Or
right.
But yeah, it's a mess. But yes, Max. To end this all, Max.
Max, we are to the Max, Max and Warner Brothers stock going down 5%.
Yeah, it's not great. I don't know what they're doing. Just don't touch my Discovery Plus. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I like my HGTV. It's great. I watch a lot of it. Don't leave it alone. I'll pay $5 for it. I don't want to pay $20. And I'm not watching Titans. Titans, I still am ashamed that all of you people got that 5 seasons of that.
But yeah, so moving along. Game prices, we've been in a $60 standard for like decades, and we're creeping to that $70 standard. So I guess, what are your like initial raw feelings on this?
I think that it's kind of ridiculous, but it depends on like, you know, the, I guess like the team, like this, like Nintendo, PlayStation, Xbox, whatever have you, right? But it kind of makes sense. Oh, don't hate me. I think it kind of makes sense in the sense that like with AAA games, like right now it seems like AAAs have kind of taken a different turn in their, like, how they're going about making the games and productions and, like, the content with it, which could explain potentially why it's jumping in that increase in price. But does that mean that what they're putting out is worth $70? I don't know. And typically in recent ones, like, you know, larger titles, they've kind of fell badly on their first release.
Look at The Last of Us on PC.
Yes. So I feel very like a little bit in between a bit, but ultimately sad.
That's fair. Sad for my wallet, sort of get where it's coming from.
I'm kind of probably a little bit in the same boat of like, I can understand it, but I think there's a lot more at play and probably makes me more sad. I think I'm probably in the more boat of like the, what am I getting for the $70 at this point? Because which will probably go into of like games have always technically been $60+ depending on how you go things. But,
oh yeah.
And so keeping up, I understand the keep up, but there's just a lot of questions of like, is this necessary? And so I'm not in the good stage of it.
It's I go very back and forth. I get that games are, you know, taking more time to develop, bigger teams. But then I also see things where a game is like, if you zoom in on this person's eye, there's actually a reflection of the room they're in. And I'm like, you didn't need to do that. Like, that's a choice that you made. And now you're telling me that I have to pay you $70 because you added a detail that I'll literally never use. But yeah, I think I get where it's coming from. And I think, like you guys were saying, for me, it very much is going to come down to the product that I'm getting in return. I think, you know, if I, like when Cyberpunk launched and, you know, literally everyone had issues with it, if that had been a $70 release and I had gone into it, I'd be pretty upset. But then there's games that, like Resident Evil Village, if I'd picked that up for $70, I'd be like, that's a little bit steep, but I had a really good time. So maybe less hard feelings. And like Matt said, games have always actually been on the more expensive side, and we've sort of been cruising under the radar, I guess, of inflation and them and people not realizing that it used to be worse.
Yeah, I think it just takes honestly like one game to actually like fulfill all those boxes, and then people are just going to like piggyback on that, whether that is going to be a good like finished product or not. That's just going to set the standard, which is really unfortunate.
Exactly.
I think the original one is NBA 2K, sadly. I think it's the first one. Out of all of them, the sports game, really? And I love sports games.
That arguably, I feel like in my head, and granted, I don't play sports games, so I'm probably going to get flack for this. I feel like they should release like a Madden once every 5 years and release roster updates as a DLC.
As an actual person who plays sports games, that's what we've been saying since about 2006.
Oh, okay. So I'm not crazy. Because, yeah, I just, every time I see it, they're like, here's a new game. And I'm like, did you adjust the AI? Did you actually tweak anything?
So, you know what they do, right? You know what they've been doing with sports games is they literally, with basically all of the economy, is they slowly take away about one feature to add a feature each year. And then, but the big feature is usually not big. And then they revamp. And then the funny thing is, after about 5 or 6 years, they add the feature that they removed.
Okay, they're just like, oh, you remember the kicker system that we added in, you know, Madden 2017? It's back now. And you're like,
you know what the funny thing?
You didn't have to take it out.
For NHL, like, 21, you know what the big thing was? They added the NHL record book back. And I'm like, but that was already a thing.
Why
like,
was what? That ever not
yeah,
there?
Why was that not in there in the first place? And then, like, you know, they'll add in, like, All-Star games or something. You're like, but that was a bit in there. Like, who cares?
Yeah, that's, man. And that's why I own a single sports game that doesn't have Nintendo characters in it. yeah, okay, so I guess my question after that, seeing that we're all kind of the mindset of, I get it, but I don't, how often do you guys actually buy games at full price?
Rarely.
Like, what warrants that for you?
To me, it's like, okay, it's the last game I bought full price, and day of, was Elden Ring. But that's because I'm familiar with the From Software games, and I like their games. But other than that, typically I like buy, like, I wait till they're on sale. Because they're getting so pricey.
That's a whole thing.
That is a whole thing.
Yeah. Is it Patient Gamer? Is that the subreddit or something like that?
I'm not sure about the subreddit, but I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, there's a subreddit for everything.
Yeah, it's like Patient Gamer or something, and it's literally just people who are like, I will wait a year so I can pick this up for $10. And like, I get it.
So I'm in the mindset to have a part thing of passion. But as far as like my last time, I can't honestly remember the last game I fully purchased full price. Obviously, as a person who review games, there's a little difference because if I'm like, ooh, I'm interested in this game, I'll just go review it. And so it's a little different, which is obviously kind of a whole different conversation when it comes to like what the value of a game is, whether you get it for like review purposes or you buy it. And obviously with the pricing. But no, as far as me purchasing a full game, I'm like, I honestly couldn't tell you. It's off the top of my head, to be honest. It's been a long time, because obviously, and, which is the other thing of like, I guess depending on how people are because of these game prices and fluctuations and other stuff, I end up playing only like, I've been trying to branch out, but I usually play a lot of games, but I game a lot, but I don't play a lot of games per se anymore. My games now narrow down to like 5 games that I rotate between over because... That's what I'm sure we'll
500 hours in Civ 6.
Yeah, yeah. I have like, I think it's like, I don't know, like 75 days worth in Final Fantasy. I have 1,000 hours in Anno. Like, there's a ton of...
Yeah.
Why do I need to buy other games? Especially as we talk, I'm sure we get into like DLC and games of service and live service. Like, at some point, why do I got to buy a new game?
I would say, with how expensive everything is, it's kind of nice when you get that game that's sort of, for lack of a better term, a life ruiner.
Yes.
Where it's like, this is all I'm going to do. Like, yes, I'm, you know... I think I'm like 190 hours deep into Stardew Valley.
I would never let a game ruin my life, first of all. Okay, guys? We'll never let that happen. No.
So proud. Okay, actually, that's a lie. Mario Party, I think, was the last one I bought. There we go. When did that come out? And that's only because that's a whole other issue of Nintendo.
Well, yeah. So I was going to say, the games that I've paid full price for, I've gotten Resident Evil Village at full price, but that was because it was bundled with my Xbox. And I got Resident Evil 4 at full price, but that was because I had a gift card. And then the other games that I've bought at full price, I think have pretty much exclusively been Nintendo games, because Nintendo doesn't put stuff on sale really ever, or very rarely. They just did that the Mario Day sale where things were $40 instead of $60. And like that
Hold
was a steep discount.
A true
for them.
Blessing.
Hold me back. That's me. Like, you're like, you don't play Mario Odyssey or Mario Galaxy? I'm like, what, the game that was 7 years ago that's still $65? No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's rough. And I feel like that is the biggest, for me, that's like the biggest source of, yeah, full price games, is because I know I'm not going to get Pokemon for, you know, less than $45-$50, maybe on sale. I'm not going to get a Mario game less than 60. And so I have to evaluate, like, is this a game I actually care about enough to buy it? Or is this one that, like, I'm good to just, like, go buy with Nintendo?
So I did buy Pokemon, but I guess I did have, like, I saved up coins. I think I talked to you, Alex, about it. Like, I actually saved up all coins to dump them all on Pokemon so that it was cheaper, so I didn't buy it technically full price. But yes, the Switch games. There we go. The two Switch games. Outside of that, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, and so it's a whole thing specifically with that company. But I think another thing, Matt, that you had brought up off mic was just inflation and, you know, consumer purchasing power and how that impacts how often we're actually buying things full price.
So the reason I bring this up, because people talk about how games have been up, you know, like in the 90s and everything, if games were $50, $60, we've been at $60 mm-hmm. forever, blah, blah, blah. But also, I mean, we can talk about today's economy, which is one thing, but at the end of the day, like in the last 10, 15 years, like everything has grown more to where, like, you know, whether it's gas, whether it's milk, whether it's housing, you know, what the consumer buying power has actually dwindled over the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
And so while the game prices have stayed the same, and you can argue that inflation needs to make them go up, people are paying more for basic necessities. And so now you're cutting into actual other stuff where it turns into, like, you know, beforehand, it's like, oh, I can afford a game and I can afford to, you know, my groceries were $50. Now it's like, oh, this game is $67, but my groceries are now $200. And so what you have for the spending power, it's weird because, like, due to inflation, yes, the game prices and costs and everything else should go up. We understand that. But the people who are buying them are losing power of actually being able to buy things. Yeah. And at the end of the day, the games is not a necessity. It is basically a luxury. And so that's what the hard thing of trying to explain that to people, like, well, yeah, but the inflation, I'm like, yeah, but I also, you know, milk used to be $1, now it's $4.
I would say that, like, though, I feel that this is only applicable to AAA games, but like with the indie games, they're still relatively the same, like, price waypoint. Yes, definitely. So there's still more leeway there in terms of, like, I guess that not being as pricey for people to kind of engage in.
Right, which we've also seen, to be honest with the problem, though, of, like, it's been, that one has been more lean towards the consumer, but we've also seen devs going, well, we also don't have the backing of AAA money, so we actually need money.
Yeah. I think the other thing for me with the inflation argument is that if you can pull up old Toys R Us catalogs and see that, you know, that game sold for $50 in 1996, which would really be this much today. And it's like, that's true, but the glut of games back then was significantly smaller. And I think the pressure to play everything was significantly less. I don't remember. I mean, it was fun when you and all your friends had the same game and were playing it. But at the same time, like, if you picked up some, like, you know, you pick up Banjo-Kazooie and your friends don't have it, it wasn't really like a big thing. It was like, oh, but we all have GoldenEye, so let's just talk about that. There was no, like, play absolutely everything. And so, I mean, also, you know, with, like, old game difficulty where it's like, yeah, Zelda is punishing, but when that's the only game that you have, you don't mind that it's punishing because you're, you know, you're getting your money's worth. You're getting your time out of it. So I think the value proposition back in the day was also very different, and spending what is the equivalent of $100 now or whatever on a game doesn't feel as bad when there's not 30 other games you're being told you should be playing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, we talked about the content at the beginning show, but, like, there's so much content. It's so much consuming. You were just told to consume that it's just like you eventually can't afford to consume.
Or 100%. I mean, well, and especially with games getting longer.
Yeah.
Like I can, you know, knock out a 4-hour game, you know, over the course of a Saturday, or, you know, play a 10 or 15 hour game over a week or two. But then when we're getting games that are, you know, 40, 70, 100 hours, I'm going to play one of those a year, but they're releasing more than one of those a year.
I play the same 5 games, 6 games, so we're good.
Catherine,
what type of, so you obviously mentioned in game. So do you play, like, or from, I guess from an average month to year, whatever, are you playing like 5 to 6 indie games a month since the price point? Are you playing like 1 or 2 larger AAAs per, I mean, like, year? Like, I guess what is your type of playing?
It depends. So I kind of go all over. So, but mostly I play a lot of indie games because I just like them, and they're a little bit more offbeat than your AAA,
right,
I don't know, genres and titles, which is interesting to me. But typically I'll do that, like maybe do 3-4 of those, depending on how the length of the indie games, and then I'll maybe rotate like one larger game, and then like one like MMO style game to kind of like have that instant gratification that I like desperately need, you know. So I'll have that in my rotation. So I kind of like go all over the place, but even then, it's still like a matter of choosing like which is like quote unquote worthy of my time and my money, because right.
Which the funny thing is, because the other time, much we're talking about money and consumer buying time, time is the other big thing. Everybody just works so damn much.
Mm-hmm.
One, obviously, being kids versus being adults is one thing, but also just generally we're looking at, one, we're bringing back child labor, but that's another discussion. But like, we're doing like, you know, the time of what we're giving is getting shorter and shorter of what we have for what we're doing. So whether it's less buying power or just less general time, at some point factoring both of those in, you just don't have all of that equal to what it was of like $50 back then.
Well, what are you guys looking for in like in a game like nowadays? Like with given the time and money, what is your like ideal or sought after like $70 game? What does that comprise of?
So for me, I can tell you right now, my $70 games are something that one, I know I'm probably going to play for, it's going to be, I know it'll be constant. I look at one, does the game work on launch? But most games I don't buy at launch, even if I could, just because it, to be honest, most of them don't work anymore at launch, so I have to wait 6 months anyways. But even if not, the games I'm looking for, I know, are we going to get content support? Are we going to try to do some support? And also, like, I'm looking at a game that probably, whether it's DLC or patches, probably something that I'm going to get at least 100 hours, if not more, out of. And then probably, if not for multiple years, and depending on the replayability of what we're doing. I'm also very strictly from what I play. I play a lot of Sims, City Builders, Management, and then obviously MMO type stuff. And then obviously your sports game, but I play those off of Game Pass just when they come on. But no, for me, when I look at like my general stuff of like, I've just for the last like few years, like City Skylines, I played like almost 100, Planet Zoo 100 plus, Surviving Mars 200 plus, Anno 1000, Victoria almost 200. Like those are things that like you can constantly keep playing. And you're constantly, one, they're constantly getting easy content updates that are not huge like DLCs as well either. So while they do get some updates and some DLCs, they're not like big, like $30, $40 expansions. They're like $10 or something. Or here's, most of your game can be played for free or updated for free.
I think what I'm looking for, it needs to work. I think like Matt said, like seeing that something has like a day one patch that's bigger than the game itself, that's a problem to me. Like that tells me that you launched a product that you were not necessarily done with and then kind of rushed to patch out all the bugs, and maybe you didn't even get all of them. So yeah, I think a quality product is kind of the main thing. Is I don't care as much about graphics. If anything, I want it to have an interesting art style more than, you know, photorealistic graphics with ray tracing and, you know, better destruction modeling on the cars and all that stuff. Like there are really, really cool things that technology can do that, while I can appreciate it, it is not a must have in a game. Like I'm okay with scripted car damage. That doesn't really bother me. And I think I'm looking for, like Matt was saying, like either I want it to be a little bit longer or I want it to have replayability. And then the other thing they could sell it for me though, is like, if it's a social thing, like if all my friends are going to be playing it, and then that, for me, that's a selling point. Like I picked up Elden Ring and I had played Bloodborne a little bit, but really this is like my first Souls, like proper Souls like. But I picked it up specifically to play it with two other friends, one of whom had already beat it, and the other one who I think had beaten Dark Souls and had not played a Souls game since or something. And so we're all at very different experience levels, just kind of like playing it at the same time, doing, you know, missions, or not missions, but like doing stuff together online and just like updating each other and talking about what we're doing. And that made that game worth full price to me, was the social element of it and being able to enjoy it with friends.
Yeah, because the other games that I do play is basically with Kate, of like Kate and I play a lot, and we actually review a lot of co-op game too, of just like, Kate, do you want to play this? Or should we play this together? And like that is something when it does come into value, like will we buy it? Sure, because can we play it together? And what
It's huge. I think the other thing, not a feature that I'm looking for, but a knock against a game being $70, is if there is planned DLC before the game even comes out, because that tells me that you are cutting content out and then charging me for it.
Pokemon?
Fair.
But yeah,
but we've all like, no, kind of engaged in that still, though, right? We're all guilty of engaging in that DLC.
I have a little bit, but it is a very frustrating thing they're like, hey, the game's out. And it's like, by the way, in a week, you're going to be able to give us $20 for 5 extra missions. And I'm like, why are those not just in the game?
So here's the thing.
Why are those 5 missions special?
So that's the thing about a lot of my city builder games. Most of them, their full price is $30 to $40. And so I know there's content coming from those games, but I don't mind because it is not the true $60 game either. They are the $30 to $40 range games that I know might come with a few more problems than usual. Obviously, I don't like what we've done a little bit, but I was a very big early access person for a while because I liked that concept that I could get the game a lot cheaper. I know there'd be bugs. They're continually updated, and eventually they'll fully release it, and it'll be good. Obviously, they've kind of used that to kind of get around some loopholes of ever fixing things and blah, blah, blah.
Games that are perpetually in development, also available.
Or like Ark, when they're like, we're in early access. We now have paid DLC. And I'm like, you couldn't even launch the game first? But once again, it's another one of those things that in concept and theory, it was great.
That's something that I feel like the publisher or the store outlet needs to put a limit on.
Yeah.
Of like, you cannot mark your game as in development and then also sell DLC.
Yeah, Battlegrounds for Hearthstone is still in technically beta or early access, whatever, and despite it's been 4 years at this point, or 3 years. It was another one of those that was great in concept, it was great in theory, and then capitalism happened, and then you're like,
That's, I guess, in the same note of, I don't like playing DLC, microtransactions in a game that I paid $70 for, depending on what they are, can feel very bad.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Where it's like, I gave you $70, and now you're like, yeah, but if you want this hat, give us 2 more.
So I guess that's
or grind for it.
I don't mind the grind part, but yeah.
I don't mind the grind, except there are times where people have done the math on it, and it's like, oh, to grind for everything in the game would take you 900 hours, and that's assuming that you win every match you play.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so it's not achievable.
Yes. So I guess that's the problem we have. I'm not, and that's where we kind of weird, because I guess if we go to the other thing of justifying the $10 increase versus whatever, when it comes to the DLC, I kind of mentioned a little bit game to service, stuff that I know is going to have multiple years of content and support of stuff and then microtransactions. It's weird because one of those, I've been a big fan of a lot of that stuff. I've liked the continuation of games. I've liked the extending of games. But it has been one of those. We knew when this first happened, it was kind of a way because they knew games, they wanted more money, we needed development costs, blah, blah, blah. And so they kind of said, hey, we keep game prices low, but we charge you for more stuff. And now it's just kind of weird because it's like, now you're charging us more money, but you still have all those extra realms of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of been weird of I don't know. I'm within the point of I don't mind paying the $70 if I know that's what I'm going to get. And I know if I'm, and I don't even mind paying for DLC coming as long as I know it's actually an actual old school, expansion DLC and not the here 3 missions type things. But that's just sadly
3
not...
missions, a golden handgun, and bonus knives every level.
Yeah. I don't...
Are we talking about Destiny right now?
Yeah. But no, that's I don't mind paying $70 and having a good full on DLC expansion. Mm-hmm. What I don't like is paying $70. I still have to wait for half your game, whatever. I still have a bunch of microtransactions. I still have small little DLCs. And then the DLCs being like you said, stuff that's why wasn't this in the game in the first place? This isn't something new, exploratory. This was literally content that you clearly had in the game and you explicitly swiped it off.
Yeah,
which Destiny was famous for when they start people messing around with all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, because Destiny also eventually started removing DLC campaigns, right?
Oh, God, yes.
And retiring them. And yeah. But I was going to say, I feel like they've maybe lost their way a little bit. I don't know if this is still their rule. But at one point, I remember seeing, I think it was at E3, Nintendo was talking about their policy on DLC for any game is, how about you finish the game first and then we'll see if we want to do DLC. If anybody tried to float an idea of and then we want to do DLC like this, they're like, is the game done? Go back and finish it, and then we'll talk about your idea. And I just appreciate the idea of you should finish the product before you start looking at how else can we milk it, you know? But that's also just that I when I buy a game, I to just have the game and to not need to fork out more money to experience the game.
So I guess a person that plays indies, I'm sorry, you, Catherine, you are now a designated indie person. I know Alex, you do too, but you do
I play some indie
stuff,
but not a ton.
You do the weird Game Boy stuff though,
That's true. I've played a few indie Game Boy games.
But I guess are you a fan of the DLC typed up? Cause I know it's kind of, I would argue, probably rarer in indie games, but like, how does that work for games that are smaller in concept, smaller in budget, smaller in just everything, I guess?
I guess there's some games that are like indie that have DLC content, like Darkest Dungeon has a couple of those. I guess more roguelike games have been coming out with like added
Vampire
content.
Survivor just dropped a new, a second DLC pack, I think.
Yeah, which is kind of on the same beat that Alex was saying earlier, where it's like, it could have been part of it, but they just added it on. And I don't know. I think for the price point of like the initial game of indies anyway, like that had DLCs, it's not, I don't feel mad about it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, because it's like an even playful. The price isn't that high compared to like your 70. It's like 24, what, 19 bucks or like that anyway.
Yeah. I think Vampire Survivor was like $5 when it dropped. And I think it still is. And I think each DLC has been $2.
Yeah. But again, it just depends on the game and the content. Like with roguelike, you know, it's going to be endless all the time. So I wouldn't mind paying like 10 bucks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Hades 2 had actually just dropped as Hades DLC, which I think it originally was maybe going to be, I would have paid another $25 for it because I trust that team that much.
So since we're talking about the kind of value, because I know I do this all the time. So what do we feel about then free-to-play games and then buying stuff? Because I've been
thinking about that. Yeah, because you have games like Fortnite where it's like, hey, you technically don't have to give us money to do this.
It's never free, you guys.
Oh, I know it's that, not. But I'm asking, like, do you feel good? Because I'm not going to lie. There's so many games that are free-to-play that, like, I play so much that I've probably given them way more money than if I would have just paid $60 on there.
Yeah.
No,
it's
just
no. Okay, no. Okay.
I mean, it comes down to just like your discipline, I guess.
Yes.
I think where you more get something interesting is when you get games releasing not for $60, $70, but games releasing that should be free to play, but instead they want like $25. I'm thinking of very specifically Fall Guys when it debuted, where it was like, this is a perfect free to play game. People can buy these doofy little suits and colors and whatever, like it's just cosmetics, and then you just goof around with your friends online. Like, it was perfect to be free to play, and instead I think they hindered themselves by launching it as like a $25 game, and then I think like 6 months or a year later they made it free to play because they realized like, we will get so many more people in here if we're not charging for it.
Plus, did it have enough like content, like the first launched, it had a lot of like hype, right, and people were playing it a lot. But then it was like the same repeated map over and over, the same five maps.
Yeah, you realize like,
right?
Oh, I've done the same handful of levels over it. Like every first round appears to be this level for some reason. And I've heard there's others, but I'm not seeing them.
So I'm going to show my age here. But I remember I played when League of Legends started up first time. So I've been used to the skin game for like a long time. And so it was weird seeing that stuff. But I didn't mind that. And it's like, I'm definitely not like a big, like, we need to buy all these skins. Like, I think Fortnite's gone way too crazy, and I don't know how to
Fortnite
do that.
Oh, Fortnite has lost its mind.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, like, I just never bothered that. I guess for me, like, when I think of that Smite and Fortnite and the MOBA stuff that we've done, and just other games of, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, you give me a free-to-play game that I get stuff like Neverwinter, which I've probably got, like, close to 1,000 hours in. Mm-hmm. I probably spent way more than $60 on some of those damn things, and I don't mind.
I mean, I'm not against the skin game. I think for me, it's just a matter of, like, it can't be randomized. Like, if I'm putting dollars in, I should pick what I get out.
Yeah. So that's my thing. So I don't mind doing, obviously this is not there here or there because it's kind of different, the loot box thing, which is obviously kind of where we go with the microtransaction bet. I don't mind it. Yeah. I love the gambling stuff. People make up their mind. Point being, this is why I hate Overwatch, of like, I don't mind doing the, I can guess, but I should be able to buy what I want to buy.
Yeah. And I feel like Overwatch 2 very specifically is one that
you mean
people
1.5
did the math
that they converted to free to play that was still the same, but also like, okay.
But yeah, but people, that was one where they did the math and they were like, oh, this is, it's next to impossible to grind out for some of these old armor sets. Like it's paywalled without being paywalled so that they can say it doesn't cost money. And I think that that's where, like you were saying, loot boxes, I'm okay. Like I'm not a huge fan of loot boxes if there is not a more direct path to it. Cause Overwatch had it where you can just go buy the specific skin that you want, like with points that you've earned in game. Or you can give us $5 for a loot box and maybe you'll get it on random chance. But they at least did kind of both of those things. I think skins, it's really just like, I want a vending machine, not a gashapon.
You, excuse me, what?
vending machine where you select what you get.
I know what a vending machine is.
The little thing where you turn the key in a random like capsule with the toy drops out.
They had it back in the old times too. From like 25 cents.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've never heard it called that. I guess the gumball machine, is that where we're going? That we're
yeah.
Going to?
I mean, yeah. I want a vending machine, not a gumball machine.
Catherine's like, I'm here with a bunch of olds.
Hey, I'm old too.
So I guess moving on because obviously we probably move forward. I guess the biggest thing, because we talk about the price and stuff, and we do everything else and free to play. Mm-hmm. I'm still a proponent. I guess the bigger problem we have is, at the end of the day, if we're going to increase game prices, whether it's DLC, not DLC, whatever. Mm-hmm. But
where does
like,
the money go?
Well, not just where the money go, but like, why do I have day one patches? Why is performance so pretty
That's
bad?
A fair
why
question,
do I have to wait 6 months for the game to be what the game is? Whether it be Marvel Avengers, whether it be Halo Infinite at this point, that like we're going on year 3 and we still don't have a Forge, I believe. I don't know. At this point, I gave up. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? Like, I know that one, I guess they did finally just give it to you for free at some point. I think between Game Pass or the PvP version, put it, dice it. But I guess my problem with it, if I see prices going up, I just don't feel like the quality of what we're getting is better. And then like
quality is waffling. Companies are already profitable. So raising the game price really does feel purely like a greed move, because I really doubt that extra $10 is going into a developer's pocket as much as it's going into like a CEO's pocket, you know?
Plus, they know that there are people out there who like want to buy it first day in a certain amount of time because they didn't want to feel left out because of like either if it's like a multiplayer game or something, you want to be able to play with your friends and you want to be able to like be there from the first day to grind out and understand like the mechanics, the gear, hybrids, what have you, right? Mm-hmm. So they know, and we probably have done it.
Oh yeah,
I've done it.
I for sure done. Matt was telling Catherine before recording, I just did it with Resident Evil 4, where I wasn't planning on buying it at full price, and then I was like, I do have that gift card, I guess I, and then I like was just like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, I want to be in on it while it's happening and not like, you know, digging through old, you know, tweets and forums and Reddit posts to like find out what gun I should be using where, and like I want to like do the learning and the messing around with everyone else, because unfortunately, it is a different experience playing a lot of games at launch versus, you know, later 6 months later.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, I think it just depends on what you're playing. Like, I think the online stuff, like, you definitely probably want to be there. I think if it's more of a single player, like we say, people wait a lot longer, you can do stuff.
Oh, yeah, single player, it's easier. I think the most frustrating thing is trying to get into a game, like an online game that's been going for a while that doesn't have either good matchmaking or, like, any sort of protections for like baby players, like where you jump in and just get demolished because you have not had time to build up your weapons or armor.
That's why I retired from FPSs, because if you don't play 7 hours a day from launch, you just you suck.
Oh yeah.
And I don't mind sucking, but also I don't want to just get destroyed the whole time. Like, at least let me go
the grind at that point isn't worth it. It's not fun. And then there's also like games that get patched so much that you can leave and come back and the meta is a completely different meta. That happened to me with Overwatch. I played Overwatch a ton when it came out, took a break for like a year or two, came back and was like, I don't know what the hell is going on anymore.
That's how I felt too when I did that. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I have to learn this again. But do I have time?
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, oh, Mercy doesn't work that way anymore. And this character's ultimate is different. And it's like, I don't want to like re-ingest all of that information.
Yeah, I don't.
But maybe that's just being stubborn old people.
Well, I guess the big thing you mentioned about the coffee company being profitable, and I guess that's where I'm just kind of like, where's the justification? Because like we've seen, the industry's only got larger. Companies have only been more profitable. Like it's not like we're like, hey, we're hurting, we need stuff. Because like, obviously this kind of goes on the scale. Mm-hmm. It's unfair to like blanket all companies because, you know, like the smaller indie games, you know, you should probably.
But like PlayStation is not going to shutter.
Yeah, no.
So them being like,
Microsoft,
hey, $10
more.
Activision's
not shuttering, you know, Square Enix, I don't think you're shuttering, even though you're selling everything, but sure. But, like, we're not seeing, like, you know, everybody's announcing record profits, and then, like, well, we need to pay $10 because inflation. I'm like, I inflation means something, but also, if you're not hurting, then it's just greed. It's not just inflation, it's just greed.
Actually, wait, go on an adventure with me, conspiracy hats.
Okay.
Let's go.
Is this just being done to drive people to gaming subscription services?
So I would.
You can spend $70 or you can spend $15 a month and get it for free.
So I would believe that for Microsoft, the problem is I don't know about the other, like a Switch, a Sony.
That's the thing is, yeah, is Sony pretty famously did not include God of War Ragnarok in their streaming service. And then Nintendo just uses their back catalog for their streaming service. So Nintendo, I think, is just following suit and like profiteering a little bit. But part of me is like, is this just to get people on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus?
I think it just depends because like, was Sony, wait, I don't know if Sony did it first with like subscription passes, but like when they did do it, what's it called? Like PlayStation Play Now or something?
Something like that.
It
wasn't that great.
Yeah.
So it was like that, because I did try that for a little bit, but I felt like it, for someone who actually played games even way back then of some of those older Sony titles, it seemed like it was only catered to that, like the people who like had that nostalgia that wanted to go back and revisit those older games, but didn't appeal to like a larger library or audience for people like that are newer going into like Sony like titles, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I'm with you because like even when they used to do games with gold, or I think it might have even been before even the playthrough, like it's all just like, hey, do you want to play this 5-year-old game? And I'm like, no. And they're like, why? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know, but why do I want to play it? Like, it's good. I'm like, cool, but like, who cares?
Yeah, I feel like the Game Pass value proposition really came in when Microsoft acquired Bethesda and was able to just throw on like really big titles that even though they're 5 years old, you know people want.
Being able to play ESO for free is great. I own it and I spend a lot of money on it, but like being able to play it for free is like that.
Yeah, anyone can dive into that. Anyone can get into Skyrim. Outer Worlds is on there, even though you can also spend $60 to own it. Although, I mean, owning is in heavy quotes, as you all know, like with digital rights and everything. And the risk of like, oh, a server shut down or your computer is not connected to the internet. You no longer have access to this. Yeah, that's something we haven't even talked about, is you're spending $70 for something that you only 10% own.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like the new landscape for the whole like, do I buy digitally or do I buy a physical copy, right? Because that physical copy was a huge thing for a while too, of like owning the copy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's my problem too, because my biggest problem with digital games, I love digital games. I don't care about physical copy, waste of space. We can go into whatever we need to do. But the problem is, we're talking about $10 justification. I should already be paying $10 less for a digital copy because you don't pay for any of the other stuff in the first place. So why am I now paying? One, those prices should have been the same.
Pressing, boxing, and shipping a copy of, you know, Elder Scrolls 6 is going to cost more than you letting me download a file.
Yeah.
Like the bandwidth is never going to equal, you know, the server farm maintenance, like all that stuff. Like, because half the time you put in the disc and it's like, hey, we're going to download the game now. This is really just like a digital key that you've purchased.
I mean, that's all they are. And that's been I've argued, because I know you and I have argued back and forth about whether physical media is good or not. And people talk about preservation, blah, blah, blah. But my big argument goes, but your physical media, they can make it if they want to not work. And they showed that they can do that. And so that's why my biggest argument was, you have just a digital key that you feel good about. You don't actually own anything.
It was valuable for a while, and then it just sort of tilted. And I mean, this is also kind of where like the internet has ruined games a little bit, because like day one patches are possible because we can. And before that, you had Superman 64. We're like, you shipped a bad game and it is forever broken. We do not have a way of fixing this.
Which, I mean, it's good because, I mean, personally, patches are great. I love being able to fix it, but as everything else, we've kind of used it as a crutch.
It's
for
now we ship you a broken product, and if we decide that you no longer have it in 2 years, then you no longer have it. And, like, those are bad uses of it.
And, I mean, to be fair, you can argue that, if you want to talk about put your hat back on, like, are we just now the QA testers? At this point,
I'm a little bit. Yeah, I mean, so. What's it called? Anthem.
Yeah. Why would we even pay QA testers when I can just ship a broken game and have you all yell at me what's broken and then I'll fix it?
Well, and then they were like, we're going to do Anthem 2.0. And then after like 6 months, they were like, actually, we're not. It's the game that you have is the game that you're getting, and we are no longer supporting, you know, future updates.
The funny thing that people always forget about Fortnite, at the end of the day, some people paid $90 for Fortnite.
Because it was a totally different game.
And then they realized that their little battle royale was 10 times better. And then they're like, you know what? I know you all gave us all that money. It was great. We already built this free mode, but y'all are screwed. Bye.
Yeah. Can you even get the old Fortnite anymore?
I don't
even know if it's even been accessible for a while.
I think when that happened at first launch, not a lot of people knew the original, I guess.
It was pretty bad, to be honest.
Yeah, I was loosely aware that it was a spinoff, but when I played Fortnite, I'm not going to say I had a bad time, but I wasn't like, oh man, what's the single player 20-hour campaign version of this?
Probably not great. It wasn't.
What I saw people play the original version that you paid for stuff in the beta, it wasn't very good, to be honest.
I mean, there was no Darth Vader. There was no DeLorean.
We definitely didn't have that, but it definitely, even beside that, it was not good.
But yeah. Well, any final thoughts on this?
I'm just sad now.
I was going to say, I was like, how's everyone feeling now? Did we end in a dark place?
I mean, I don't know. I'm in a weird place because game development has, one, gotten larger, more expensive, more stuff, but obviously the companies are still very, very profitable. So it's been a weird thing of like, I get you're costing more, but you're still making even more money. So what does it matter? I don't know what we're going to do before, whether it's subscriptions, whether it's licensing, whether it's just general of like, what is our games? It's just been sad of like, and we know most of the time it's literally not the dev's fault of like what gets shipped out. We know it's just some imaginary timeline thing, but it is very much of like, I don't know, because games are taking 6+ years. You're doing a whole, you're launching like one game a console at life at this point, and I'm like, I don't know what to do with that. And then if you make a mistake or you do anything, and then delays, and then Cyberpunk was supposed to be released 2 years before it was actually released, and they didn't even play on a PlayStation 4, but they didn't even have a PlayStation 5 when it released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or when it was supposed to be, I don't know. It's been weird. Yeah, well, it's going to be expensive and that everything else outside of gaming, which is what people seem to forget of, like, a lot of people are actually just struggling to buy everything else, necessities, and you can make all the justification in your world, but at the end of the day, you are a luxury industry and an expensive one.
And that's, and I think that maybe that's something we didn't touch on, is that this is also an accessibility issue.
Yes.
And like this is part of what makes things like Game Pass great, where there are people who are like, okay, I can afford the cheaper Xbox. I don't really want to spend $70 on a game. Oh, I can pay $15 a month. Like, I can budget that. I can carve that out of my budget from, you know, wherever I think that there's a value here. It's a much better proposition for a lot of people. And I think that maybe the most, like, one of the most disappointing aspects of bumping up to 70 is that, like, you are only going deeper into the territory of being a luxury. You know, if, because at this point, if a game is $70 and your console is $500, you are at almost $600 to play a game.
We're not talking about then if you want to add in the exclusivity of everything. Like, people like tell me, you don't play the Spider-Man game? And I'm like, what Spider-Man game? And they're like, why don't you play it? And I'm like, you want to give me $600?
Like, PlayStation.
And they're like, what? Well, do you mean $600? It's $50. I'm like, but I don't own a PlayStation. I need $600. It's $600
real
game.
Rough.
You don't have to be sad, Catherine. It was great. Gaming's fun for everybody, as long as you can afford it, with a bunch of asterisks.
Remember we could rent games? How nice that was.
Is Gamefly still a thing?
Yes,
I don't
it
have
is.
Cable anymore.
It is definitely still a thing.
I
think it's not doing well, but it is a thing.
It just seems...
We should bring that back.
Yeah.
I think the problem, to be fair, is that we killed physical media, which, for better or worse, has killed rental media, or rental systems.
And it's what I would love. This will never happen, but Movies Anywhere for a while had a lending system where you could just like let people borrow games. If I could let people borrow the games I own on Xbox, I would love that. Like, and I feel like, honestly, you might get more people who are willing to buy a game. Although, actually, what you'll get is you'll get the password sharing equivalent where, like, seven of us all chip in $10 and take turns playing it.
I mean, that's what they want, right? As long as everybody's playing. I know
that's
what they
all
want.
Yeah, well, I think that's the other thing, though, is it's like you can either get seven of us chipping in $10 or you can get none of us buying the game in a model like that. Because I feel like they would only go deeper into, like, now games are 80. Because what I want to know, these games that are, like, doing $100 gold edition deal, you know, whatever bundles, what are those going to look like as game prices increase?
I just hate that the bundles have kind of got pretty bad.
Oh, absolutely. Like, when I look at a game and it's like, well, which version do you want? And there's, like, four versions and I can barely tell the difference between three of them. And then one of them is $120 or whatever. And it's like, this sucks. This is not a fun buying experience.
At least they should give you a cool statues that were probably maybe half worth it. Now they're just like, here's a tote bag.
Well, because, now they're digital. They're not going to give you a digital statue, Matt.
Yeah, they give you a tote bag. Sometimes.
So dumb. Yeah. Well, that's kind of all I've got. Are there any, or Catherine, do you have any closing thoughts other than being sad?
No, I'm just like thinking of nostalgia times and like the better days of our youth.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's, yeah. I mean, it sucks because then they like gaming, they talk about the game price, but yeah, gaming was luxury. Then we made it accessible. Why are we trying to make it a luxury again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like what, at what rate are consoles even being pushed out now at this point too?
Yeah.
Like between new iterations.
I mean, well, the 360 was like what, 10 years before that really went away?
Yeah. Well, six.
Was it only six?
I mean, I know I had.
Oh no, I'm thinking of the PS2 that got like.
Yeah, the 360 was only probably maybe 2005 and 2006s to basically about 2012-ish.
Okay. Oh yeah, and then like 2012, 2013 is when we got the Xbox One.
Yeah.
And even that, I would say you could argue that the Xbox One didn't even get like the same amount of time because they rolled out the Xbox One X, where they were like, we're going to do a half step consoles. I think are
the worst,
maybe the most annoying thing.
Like the Wii U Plus thingy-ma-bobber. What was that thing again?
The Wii U was a separate console. You're thinking of the Wii Motion Plus, the better controller for the Wii.
Was the Wii U even a separate console?
Yeah, I have was one.
It? Just because you added the U, did anybody even know?
That, I mean, that's why that's a big part of why it flopped, is that nobody knew.
Yeah, I didn't even know about that.
So. I knew and it was a thing. That was about all I knew.
The two things that hurt it, no one knew what it was because the name was stupid. It wasn't powerful enough. And asymmetrical gameplay was not an idea people could wrap their heads around yet, because that was one of the cool things that it offered, was like one person can play on the gamepad while everyone else is on the TV. And people were like, that's dumb. I don't get it. And now we have Dead by Daylight, Friday the 13th. Like asymmetrical is a thing now and people just do it online. And Nintendo 10 years ago was trying to give it to you in your living room. It's I don't fine. Like the phrase trying to give it to you in your living room.
Get us out of here.
All right. Do you guys have any content that you want to plug for another bad word choice?
I'll go for it. I saw the Mario movie. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was
it's
good.
Not the greatest thing in the world. It's not the worst thing in the world. I enjoyed it. I had fun.
It's better than the Bob Hoskins version.
Oh, I mean, that wasn't hard. That bar was very, very low.
That's fair.
I'm waiting to see the movie to make a judgment call.
That's fine.
On that, yeah.
I'll be disappointed.
I will
in
not
you.
Be swayed by online critics and stuff like that.
I think I'm going to have a good time. Bad.
As a person who reviewed that movie, how dare you?
As an online critic.
As I am as well.
But that's about it. That's all I got.
Yeah. I'm playing the Resident Evil 4 remake and having a great time with it. Never played the original, so I don't know what's going on. There is just a boy grandpa and giant bugs, and I'm having a good time.
Wait, which game was that?
Resident Evil 4.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
It's pretty fun.
What do you got, Catherine?
I actually am not playing a game actively right now. Oh, actually, no. Lies. Okay, I'm actually playing Halo the collection right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem. Okay. I always like, why do we make these games? And then you two come back going, I'm playing Collector's Edition and Remake. And I'm like, ah, oh, I found the people who
I didn't play the original. My first introduction was like Reach for Halo, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I mean, if we want to go. Oh, sorry, continue.
And then I got into Destiny. So I'm retracing my steps, the roots.
So you're going better. Yeah. You're going backward to the better editions. Got it.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Sure, bad.
Reach isn't bad, though.
That is kind of all that we have for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like what we're doing, don't forget to drop us a like, subscribe, retweet, review, whatever like positive engagement you want to give us online. We will take it. Also, be sure to check out the website, check out the YouTube, the Twitch. We got a Discord you can join. We have an Instagram and we have a Patreon. If you want to go like another level up and maybe give us a little bit of money for what we're doing, we would very much appreciate that. I've been your host, Alex. You can find me at Most Always Alex on Twitter and scattered in the back catalog of this podcast and on Frightday.com for genre and horror news. And I am on the But Why Though Discord, usually lurking, but if you at me, I will probably reply. Catherine, where can people find you, assuming that you want to be found?
Oh, I never want to be found. I'm always invisible and offline, but
okay.
If you could find me and I'm online, it would be Keiko Parsons on underscore at Twitter, and then on Discord is Keiko Parsons as well, and every other platform there is on the internet.
That's all right. And Matt.
I'm also on the backlog of the podcast. If you don't want to listen to that, with Alex as well. We did plenty of great episodes together a long, long time ago. Part of the physical digital media catalog of reminiscing nostalgia, which was.
Are we going to release a CD box set? A greatest hits?
That would be great. But no, we would not. But no, you can find me, I guess, do we call it Twitter these days still?
Twitter Blue?
The sure. Bird app.
I am not Twitter Blue.
Hell
on the yeah on
I
the
think
Bird.
The Hell app is what I hear people call it.
The Doge app, because we had that for a little while at DATM18 DATTM18, and obviously I'm in the Discord, but you don't have to find me there.
That's
probably won't respond to you.
Just post some Furbies under shit posting, and Matt loves it. No. Anyway, that's it for this week. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time.